The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm Eric Metaxas. This is the show. I apologize. This is the best we could do on short notice. But we're going to make it up to you. We have a wonderful guest. I think many of you have heard of him. His name is Brandon Tatum. He's a former Tucson police officer. He's been involved with Turning Point USA and is the co-founder of Blexit. Brandon Tatum, welcome to this program.
Hey, well, thank you for having me on.
You're wearing a shirt that says Christ Privilege. I'm offended on behalf of all my God-hating friends. How dare you? Please continue.
I'll tell them to take it up with the big man upstairs, man. I'm just a messenger. Don't crucify me.
Okay. Now, what are you in Tucson right now?
No, I'm living in Phoenix.
You're living in Phoenix. All right, yes. Same difference. You know, in my neck of the woods, that's just so far away from everything because I'm looking behind you. People are watching this on the video, trying to figure out what city that is. But all right, Arizona, let's just to be safe. You're in Arizona. I want people, you spoke about this the last time you were on, but for folks who didn't get that or don't know you, I want them to be acquainted with you. Now, Blexit has to do with Black people exiting the Democratic Party. How did you get involved in founding that with Candace Owens? Because that's just a huge thing. How did that happen for you?
Yeah, so Candace Owens and I became really, really close friends probably around 2016, 2017. And from that point on, man, we just saw that there was a need to wake up people in this country who happen to be African-American or of African descent. And so we decided that, hey, you know, let's start a organization that can support those people, can give them access to information so that they can make the best decision for themselves. I mean, we like to use the term Blexit, but it's not just about exiting the Democrat Party. It's not about, you know, just about politics or anything of that nature. It's about being an open-minded person, having the freedom of thought and being able to be exposed to a different way of life. Therefore, you can be the best version of yourself. And that's what we do. You know, we go into communities all around the country. We have over 20 chapters in 20 states. Also, we're formulating a after-school program for young kids to have access to adequate education and help and tutoring and things that they need. So this is more than just a political statement or jargon. This is more about having people or allowing people to be the best version of themselves through education and knowledge.
Okay, so if people want to find any of this stuff online, where do they go?
Just go to blexitfoundation.com, and they'll be able to get all the information that they need and contact whomever they desire. And it depends on what state you're in. You can go and see what chapter you're associated with. You can connect there in your state, and you can donate as well.
Okay, blexitfoundation.com. That's the website, right? BlexitFoundation.com. I also want to know your story a little bit. I mean, you're wearing a shirt that says Christ Privilege. So sounds to me like you're a Jesus freak. I'm one of those also. When did that happen for you? Were you raised that way? Or was there a moment as an adult that you got serious about God? What's your story?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the two. You know, I grew up in Texas where God and football was everything. So if you wasn't going to church, I mean, you were crazy. So, you know, we were always in church, but the church wasn't in us. So meaning that we weren't really in depth on, you know, God and everything. We just showed up because there was our obligation. But in 2008, when I was in college and I was playing college football, and, you know, the story is similar to a lot of people's story. You know, when you get your lowest of the low, then you try to seek out God and see if God is legitimate, or, you know, some people choose a different path and they deny Christ. So I decided to go to church. And I got saved. I was baptized. I was filled with God's spirit. I spoke in tongues and did all this crazy stuff that I never thought would be possible.
You believe in that crazy stuff like speaking in tongues? Because I got to be honest with you, I do too. In fact, yeah. when I had my born again experience around age 25, I just assumed that came, you know, it's kind of like pay one price and what comes with the meal. I get this. I just assumed that anybody who's serious about God would want everything. And I said, I want, you know, whatever comes with it. And I thought speaking in tongues and all that stuff, that's miraculous.
Yeah.
So to experience that. So I'm always fascinated because there are Christians who don't. There are many Christians that they get weird. They think, I don't know, that's kind of weird. I don't know. And I think, well, if it's not of God, it's weird. It's worse than weird. It's evil. But, you know, you and I know it's perfectly normal. It's like walking with God. It's like, but that happened to you right away.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's kind of a process because I got baptized and then 2 or 3 days later, the people at the church prayed for me and prayed that I received the gift of the Holy Spirit. And when I did, I spoke in tongues and originally I thought that was crazy. You know, I was like, oh, that's not for me. That's the only old mothers of the church speaking in tongues for super religious people. And then when it happened to me, I was forever changed. I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you. The one thing that keeps me consistent with the Bible is that experience that I had, because, you know, there's translational things or whatever. You can go down a gamut. People can deny, people can claim that history is saying whatever, but nobody's going to be able to deny the power of the Holy Spirit that I felt. So that really changed me, you know, in 2008. And from that point on, you know, like you said, I've been a Jesus freak, man. I love the Lord and I try to honor God in everything that I do and making sure that I appreciate the sacrifice that Jesus made.
I got to ask you a follow-up question. Are you married yet? Do you have kids?
Yes, I'm married and I have two kids. I mean, me and my wife just had another child and he'll be a month on the 15th. So he's a new one, man. And I'm barely getting sleep. So,
whoa, you're in the middle of the war zone. That's like serious. Now you're not doing this thing where you stay up with your wife, right? Like for me, I made a deal with my wife. I was like, if I get up, you go to sleep. Like, we're not going to both be up. We're not going to be both frazzled. Like, we've got to divide and conquer, right? So you got to make sure one of you is getting sleep if the other one's up with the baby. I just want to say that because sometimes people are like, I want to be up there to support my wife. It's like, no. If you're going to be awake, send your wife back to bed and you feed the baby. But
it happens through trial and error because, you know, we try to both get up. You know, when the baby was new, we both want to hold him, you know. And after a while, it's like we turn into zombies and it's like, okay, you take turns. You know, I'll take a turn and we'll go from there.
But that's so cool. 1 month. That's praise God. Congratulations. That is so wonderful. You. And so how long were you a police officer in Tucson?
Yeah, so right around 6.5 years, I was a police officer.
And what made you decide to go into law enforcement? That's an amazing thing. You know, it's such a serious commitment. Were you still in Texas when you made that decision? Because I know you said you played college football in Texas.
Yeah, I played college football here in the state of Arizona. I played for the University of Arizona Wildcats. And after I graduated, I was in the 2010 NFL draft and I didn't get drafted like I expected. You know, I tried out for the NFL the subsequent year. Things also didn't work out the way they were playing. And you know, I had a mentor that told me I need to write an X on the calendar. When football is not yielding results, I need to do something else. And so policing was never on my radar. Never. I never thought once about being a police officer, but I needed a job. And my oldest son at the time was right around 1 year old. And I said, man, you know what? I can't be chasing this football dream. I need to have a job. And I had a degree at the time as well. So I applied for everything in the city of Tucson and just so happened a police department called me back. And I was shocked, honestly. And they called me. I thought they were calling me about a criminal investigation or something. And come to find out, they were like, hey, you applied. Do you remember? Do you still want the job? And I did a ride along with Officer Sean Payne, which I think is one of the most incredible officers that has ever lived. Sean Payne showed me what policing is. He showed me what a true hero is. And from that point on, I fell in love with policing and I did it for 6.5 years. I was on the SWAT team. I was a field trainer. I mean, I taught new officers. I taught at the academy. I was a spokesperson. I mean, I did everything that I could do within that 6.5 years.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk to you about a bunch of things like defund the police and all the crazy stuff that's going on. We will go to a break, folks. Right now, as you know, I'm talking to Brandon Tatum. Website, BlexitFoundation.com. Check it out. Tell your friends about it. I also want to remind you, go to our website, which is MetaxasTalk.com. MetaxasTalk.com. We are doing a fundraiser, very important, with Food for the Poor. Please check that out. We'll be right back. Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about $1 a day, to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out. Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. Like you, I am sick of hearing about big tech companies spying on their customers, selling their data, and not being able to keep their platforms safe and secure. Luckily, I've found SquadPod, a private platform that helps businesses, organizations, churches, and nonprofits take back control of their communication. SquadPod has three things going for it that other companies do not. First, SquadPod puts you in control of who is a part of your team, what they see, and how they interact with the group. Second, SquadPod is 100% owned and operated in the United States. Third, SquadPod is simple to use. Just create an account, invite your team, and start communicating via their secure video and messaging features. Learn more at squadpod.com/Eric. That's squadpod.com/Eric. Let me say it again, squadpod.com/Eric. Check it out. Folks, I'm talking to Brandon Tatum, the Officer Tatum, as he's officially known. Brandon, you were a police officer. You said you were like all into it. And what is your personal website, theofficertatum.com?
Yes, sir.
Theofficertatum.com. I just like that. It's great. You mentioned like a mentor in the police world, Sean Payne. I'm not really clear on who that is, or maybe I forgot, but tell us who that is.
Yeah, Sean Payne. I mean, he was the first officer that gave me an opportunity to have access to what police officers do on a day-to-day basis. I did a ride-along with him, and I would encourage anybody listening, watching, that a ride-along is, you know, that's the greatest thing you can do if you want to have more understanding of policing. But we did a ride-along, man. He blew my mind on the ride-along. I only did half a shift, man. I mean, we were going lights and sirens, saving people's lives. It was a gentleman that was attempting to commit suicide. I saw Officer Payne save his life. I mean, Officer Payne wasn't even phased, man. He was like a superhero. He went into rescue mode and then he went back into being a normal person. And I had never seen anybody with that type of ability to, you know, to persevere and have strength and courage. I'd never seen that before. And Sean Payne really opened my eyes to policing. And that's what one of the main reasons why I became a police officer.
Well, it's amazing to me because, you know, when I grew up, my parents always taught me, you know, to be hugely respectful of police officers, whatever. And to me, it's just out of natural fear. I mean, you think to yourself, these guys have guns. They're working a really difficult job. I want to help them. I don't want to be like a pain in their neck or whatever. And I'm always amazed when I hear people, you know, talking badly about cops. I'm thinking, do you have any idea what these guys have to go through and the work that they do? What if they all just went home? Like, well, you know, what about that? It really does amaze me that people talk about that, and that we've got insane people talking about defunding the police. Do you think, I mean, whenever I hear anything that stupid and offensive, I immediately think, I'm not even going to answer that. Like, that's so stupid. It's not even worth the conversation. I mean, is there any human being in America who can make sense of the nonsense of defunding the police? It's just like so stupid. It's like saying, like destroy the electric company. We don't want electricity. You know, that's fascist. It's just complete madness. What do you think? Is there anybody in that world that legitimately thinks that this could work? I mean, what do they really mean by that? Like, let's give somebody the benefit of the doubt. What could somebody who's crazy enough as they would say that, what are they thinking in their crazy head would replace the police?
Well, anybody with that sentiment is not functioning mentally at the highest capacity. I think some people are brainwashed. Some people are just evil. I mean, there's no mathematical equation that will give you the sum total of success when you defund the police. It never made sense. It never makes sense to the people that say it. They're just operating in emotions, like I said, either brainwashed or hatred. There, you know, policing in America is something that most people have no idea about. They have zero understanding. I mean, I made a video on my YouTube channel about a shooting and a domestic violence call. I mean, that happened in a split second where both officers got shot. I mean, it was a crazy dramatic thing. And these people want to send social workers to these violent events that can erupt at any moment. But policing in America is a special career. It's a calling on these individuals' lives. And without the police, our society would never be the same. Our society would be rooted in corruption and violence, and people wouldn't be safe. I mean, policing is the backbone of the community. And I wish that police would have a fair statement being made about them. You know, I wrote a book called Beaten Black and Blue, and that's about policing in America. You know, I tell my story. I interview other police officers in that book. I mean, it's going to be coming out in November, but I tell the story of police, and I think that we need more of those stories to be told, more of insight to be had for our society, so people can be a little more rational.
We got to have you back in the fall to promote that book, because I just think your perspective is so important. But I mean, you mentioned it's a calling. That's how I feel about it. In other words, the idea of, first of all, most jobs are supposed to be callings. Like in the old days, when somebody says, I'm going to become a teacher, it's like God has called me to be a teacher or to be a doctor. And it's a noble calling. And it's kind of interesting that people used to wear uniforms, not just cops, but any profession. You know, doctors wouldn't wear scrubs. They would be wearing the white uniform. A nurse would be wearing a white uniform. A teacher would know that I'm a teacher. Publicly, when I go out, like, people look at me like, that's a teacher. We've kind of lost that in a way. We kind of act like these are just jobs. And if you're putting your life on the line, how can that just be a job? That can't be a job. You have to really believe that you're called to do something like this.
Yeah. Are you going to burn out? Are you going to be a bad police officer? In my personal opinion, you know, they don't pay you enough to do the stuff that you're called to do. And you have to really have a heart for what you're doing. You have to have a heart for people. You have to really love people in spite of their shortcomings and violent tendencies. And if you don't, I mean, you're going to abuse your power, and you probably hurt people and be the ones that we talk about on television that many people are despised. And I'm not saying many people, meaning that people in this country, I'm saying many people who understand policing may despise these individuals, but it's a calling on your life. And if you feel that way, you can persevere, you'll fight through it. No matter if they're defunding you, no matter if they're ridiculing you, you can put a smile on your face and say, hey, this is my calling. I'm going out. I'm going to risk my life for people that I don't even know, maybe even people that hate me. And I'm also risking my life for people that love and respect me. So I think that if police officers can understand that, and people understand that's why police officers do it, and it's not just for the money and the pension, because I'm telling you right now, they don't pay you enough money and they don't give you a good enough pension for you to die for people who are ungrateful in many cases. So it's a calling, 100%.
It's funny. My Uncle Joe was a firefighter here in New York City. And this is in the 70s. When, you know, the Bronx was burning, the South Bronx was burning, and, you know, a lot of people are pulling false alarms, and it was just chaos. And I just remember thinking, wow, what he goes through every day. And back then is very similar. You know, the disenfranchised minorities were like, that's the enemy. And it's like, this guy is laying his life on the line for you. How are they the enemy? How are the cops the enemy? But it's a mentality. And, you know, I don't blame the people who think that way as much as I do the leaders, the people in public life who dignify that kind of thing. I mean, they're really the ones who lead the way and put out a lot of this false lunacy. I have to ask you about, you know, the racialization of everything in America. Obviously, you know, you're a Black American and you see this really clearly. The idea that the cops are the enemy or that the cops are somehow against people of color. I can't tell you how many cops I see that are themselves people of color. So it just becomes like a kind of a lunacy. You've been in the middle of this. I mean, what was it like when you were working as an officer in Tucson? I mean, I just even get the impression that cops don't even look at each other. Is this a Black cop? Is it, you're cops. You got each other's backs.
Yeah. I mean, and you don't look at race or none of that stuff. Nobody cares. You know, when you're a police officer, man, we are brothers and sisters and we'll die for each other. That's the bottom line. You know, while I was a cop, I never met a racist cop ever. You know, I met some cops that are insensitive. You know, they may not, you know, pander to you just because you're a part of a certain culture and you want to be treated a certain way. They treat you the same. And some people don't like that. And they feel that they're being prejudiced or biased or whatever the case may be. But I never met a racist cop, and no cop has ever been racist to me. I never lost opportunities. I mean, I was the spokesperson of my police department that was majority white and Hispanic. We patrol areas that were majority minority. Although all the police officers were white, you know, and never had any real conflict. People are just being lied to and brainwashed about the racial tension in this country, man. Cops are not targeting Black people just for the heck of it. And when I was a police officer, it had nothing to do with your race. You can be green. The threat, I mean, the problem was, were you a threat or were you not? It's not like Black people are the only people that have guns. And it's not like white people somehow had this invisible barrier where they can't harm police officers and they can't be violent and they're all good people. And it's like, no, that's not true. Every race has bad people. Every race has good people. So it's a myth that they use to try to pit us against one another. You know, the biggest lie that has ever been told is that white police officers are targeting Black people. And that's the biggest myth, because when you
look at this. And who said that? I think LeBron James said that, and others, they just flat out said it, that cops are hunting Black males. I thought, how can you say, like, that's just mind blowing to say such a thing.
It's not true. I mean, you know, LeBron James has matured in his abilities to play ball, but he haven't matured in his brain. So he's lying to himself. You know, somebody vandalized his house, whom he don't know the suspect, but white officers came to the rescue and took the investigation. So it's a lie, and I wish people would change the way they think. Black people are patrolled more, not because of racism, it's because the criminal element and these failures in the Democrat Party that's driving these communities to a negative place. So I think people should revisit policing, give them a fresh shot, treat them like you want to be treated. And I think we'll end up in a good spot.
It's a privilege to speak with you, folks. We're going to continue the conversation. I'm talking to Brandon Tatum. You can go to BlexitFoundation.com, BrandonTatum.com, TheOfficerTatum.com. We'll be right back. Folks, welcome back. I want to remind you, go to MetaxasTalk.com. We are doing a fundraiser with Food for the Poor. They really need our help. They come to us, to this program, because they know those who tune into this program get it, that we're supposed to give back, that God has blessed us all in some measure, and that the only question is, where do I give? What's a safe place to give to know my money's not being wasted on some bureaucracy like the Clinton Foundation, for example? So if you go to our website, you'll see the banner for Food for the Poor. Please do what you can. We want 100% participation. Doesn't matter what you give. Everybody is entered for the grand prize drawing. We give many grand prizes. It's fun. It's good stuff. I'm talking to Brandon Tatum, who is one of the founders of the Blexit Foundation and Blexit. We should talk briefly about the George Floyd thing, only because it's in the news lately. And I just have to say that, you know, people seem to be playing on other people's emotions. When you first see that video, it's so horrifying and whatever, and you instantly make judgments. And then time passes and a little more information comes out, a little more information comes out, and you go, wait a minute, wait a minute. The narrative is already set. Everybody who did that is a satanic villain and he's a victim. But then when the information comes out, you realize, well, wait a minute, it's working against the narrative. He was saying, I can't breathe before he was on the ground. Yeah. Why didn't that information come out in the beginning? Why didn't the information come out that he's got drug problems? It really is just one of these things. And I say this because, you know, it's heartbreaking when anybody dies. It's really, really heartbreaking. There's no doubt about that. But the idea that people are being demonized in the court of public opinion like that, that's really not the American way. It's kind of what happens right now with the media. So what is your take on it? Because I honestly, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. So, I think that people have a vested interest in making police officers seem racist. They make money on controversy. I mean, so all of this stuff is a made up scenario that political people are pushing. When you look at George Floyd's situation, I mean, the guy wasn't walking around a saint of God doing everything right and some racist, crazy, you know, police officer just murdered him. That's not what happened. You know, this guy was trying to purchase something with fake money. The police were called in response. He began to be belligerent. He was high on methamphetamine and fentanyl, which fentanyl is one of the most dangerous chemical drugs that you could that anybody can ever be exposed to. I mean, just smelling fentanyl can kill you. This guy was high on fentanyl and methamphetamine, and he was resisting arrest. And I don't think Officer Chauvin did what I would do. I don't think he did what was right. But what he did it cause the death of George Floyd is what everybody should be wrapping their mind around. And justice was, quote unquote, swift, because the next day they all went to jail and got charged. So, or at least shortly after. So all of the outrage is bullcrap. And I'll tell you this, and I'll make a prediction that I really am questioning whether or not Officer Chauvin will even be convicted. The other officers guarantee they won't be convicted, in my personal opinion. But I'm questioning if Officer Chauvin would be charged given the charges that they have pending against him.
And why do you say that? In other words, is it because now we know that George Floyd was high on two different drugs and there were health issues involved, and that it wasn't what it looked like? Or why do you say that?
Well, there's a few things, because George Floyd, you know, the knee on the neck situation, even though it was ridiculous and I would have never done it, looks, you know, I think the police officer shouldn't have done it. The police department trains that. So he was in protocol of the police department. The police department will be held liable for his actions taken, because that's a trained use of force. So when you talk about malice, when you talk about intentionally doing something that's breaking the law, Chauvin was not breaking the law by using that tactic that was taught. He was also performing his duties as a field training officer, which he was teaching other officers those tactics, and he was instructing them to do according to the training in the academy. So they charged him with second degree murder and also second degree manslaughter. And at best, he may get charged with second degree manslaughter, but second degree murder is not going to be on the table. Second degree murder, and some people may not understand, in the state of Minneapolis, that it doesn't involve intentional murder. One subsection is intentional murder. The other subsection is unintentional murder. But being malice or committing another crime while you're committing that unintentional murder. And I don't think that they can prove that Officer Chauvin was committing an additional crime when he unintentionally murdered, or he was malice in his behavior, given the fact that they had trained him to do that duty. So it's going to be an uphill battle for them to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Chauvin was the primary cause of George Floyd's death and not the fatal amounts of fentanyl and methamphetamine in his system.
Well, it also seems to me like we have mob rule in America, that people are basically saying, well, if you don't give us what we want, we don't really care about due process or any of this stuff. If you don't give us what we think it should be, we're going to burn down the city. And then it also seems to me that we have politicians, governors, mayors who do not have the guts to stand up to vandalizing, pillaging mobs. They sort of let them do it. And I actually see that as racism. It's kind of like saying, you know, these people, they're so pathetic and stupid, we're going to let them do this because what do we expect? And I think to myself, what do we expect? You should never allow anyone to do anything like that. It doesn't really matter what the issue is. We don't do that in America. But it seems that we have politicians that are willing to let this go. We're going to go to a break here, so I don't want to give you a chance to respond to that when we come back. Folks, I'm talking to Brandon Tatum. You can go to his website, which is theofficertatum.com. I recommend that you do go to theofficertatum.com and check out the Blexit Foundation, blexitfoundation.com. We'll be right back. Folks, I'm talking to Brandon Tatum. You may know him as the founder, co-founder of Blexit with Candace Owens, and as a former Tucson police officer. I just want to give you a chance to respond to what I was saying before, Brandon, because it's so confusing to so many of us. We think, like, we have cops, we have law and order. Why are we allowing people to burn down cities, to destroy property? It's just crazy to me. It's like, we don't need to allow that.
Yeah, I mean, they don't. It tells you that the leadership don't care about the community. They don't care about the people. Just like your child. You know, I care about my sons, so I'm not going to let them act a fool, and I'm going to support them, but I'm not going to let them act out and ruin their lives and ruin their reputation and all of the above. I'm going to treat them right because I love them. If I didn't love them and didn't care about them, then I'd let them flip out, roll on the ground, cry, spout, lose composure, all of the above. And that's exactly what these leaders are doing in the community. They don't care. They think Black people are animals. They think this is an appropriate response. These people deserve to burn down their own communities and burn down Black businesses and have property value go down in these areas. They deserve to do this. And it's racism in the fact that they think so little of Black people in these inner city communities. And it's also racism because they wouldn't have cared if Officer Chauvin was not white. If George Floyd was not Black, they wouldn't have cared. There was another a person that had a similar situation to George Floyd. He was white. The officers were white. And they didn't say not one word about the situation. And if you ask me, the situation involving the other young man who happened to be white was worse than George Floyd because they made fun of him. They laughed at him while he was dying. They made jokes about him crying to his mama. I mean, it was even worse than George Floyd, but you would never hear about it a day in your life. Like I said, people don't even know the name of this individual, and I don't want to get his name wrong. You can Google it, but you know, it doesn't matter if he's not Black. It doesn't matter if the cop is not white. It's all propaganda. It's all racial tension that they make money off of and on the back end.
Well, it does seem to me like a profound lack of courage not to stand up to mobs that are destroying property. It's just an amazing thing. But it's an interesting thing, really, since the 60s, we've been seeing this in America when we had, you know, radical students taking over universities, and they pretty much let them get away with it. They didn't need to, but they kind of had this attitude like, well, who are we? You know, we're over 30. What do we know? And it's kind of that, you know, throwing common sense in the garbage and letting people act out or act the fool, as you put it. In my mind, you denigrate somebody when you allow them to behave that way. And yeah. And we shouldn't allow it. And I really think that people need to hold these leaders accountable. If somebody is not enforcing the laws and is not putting enough cops in the situation to keep things safe or whatever, whether it's a mayor or a governor, it seems to me that they should be liable for this because this is common sense stuff. That's their job. And they have an obligation to do it. I don't know how that works, but it's an amazing thing to me when cops are told to stand down or to get involved, which I know has happened in some cases. I don't know which cities we're talking about.
Yeah, but you either have laws or you don't have laws. It's very simple. The Constitution protects freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. So if you're going to go protest and you can do stuff, it's totally fine within the realm of the Constitution. It's fine within almost every state law that there is in every state in the union. But you can't go and burn a building down. That's not protest. That's not That's not freedom of speech. That's not protected in the Constitution. And things that are not constitutionally protected, why are we allowing these things to happen? I think that once you infringe on another person's constitutional right, that's where yours end. You can't go out and stop people from going to work and burning down property and damaging people's businesses, looting, stealing, killing. You can't do all that in the name of your protest and quote unquote your freedom of speech. That's not the way it works. You should be, people should be civil. You can go and protest like Martin Luther King did. And now Martin Luther King, everything that he did wasn't legal, but it was nonviolent. So what he did was he peacefully protested with resistance and they got arrested. They went and did sit-ins and different things like that, but they were not violent. And if these people want to go and occupy in the police station and sit there and cross their arms and make their voice known, police station is a public building, you know, on the access side where the public can go into it. Do that, but don't burn stuff. Don't blow up police cars and do all this stuff that we've seen them do. That is counterproductive to your movement because now people are focusing on the hatred that you're spewing and they don't get the message that you're trying to portray. And I do think that some of these people, probably most of these people, are genuine in their approach. They're just being misled. You know, they believe that police officers are racist and all this other stuff. If the police officers were racist, their outrage would be reasonably legitimate if we were dealing with a society of people just murdering black people just for no reason, you know, kind of like a hit from the federal government on or the local government on black people. And then that would make sense. But that's not what's happening. It's all a mythical thing that politicians use to make money. Breonna Taylor wasn't an innocent woman who was killed by the white racist police officers. And I don't think Chauvin and George Floyd had anything to do with race. I just think it was a cop that was, you know, I think he was a bad cop in my personal opinion. I think he was a bad cop and a dummy who was high on fentanyl and methamphetamine. I mean, these two, a bad cop and that collide, you're going to have problems. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, it's amazing. Even the idea of resisting arrest. I mean, it just blows my mind that anyone would ever do that in America, that you would feel the freedom to do that. But, you know, don't you know that one little thing could go wrong and you're dead and it's over? I'm just absolutely fascinated that people would be so foolish, in a sense, really, to put themselves in that situation, because you do not know if this cop is great or not that great. You really don't know. And it's just a lack of wisdom. My friend Bevelyn Beatty was stabbed and almost killed in DC by some Black Lives thugs. These were thugs. They just, you know, pulled out knives and stuff. And I think that the media plays a role as well. They're simply not reporting on this. They're making it difficult for us to talk about this. They're accusing us of hate speech. Even trying to see both sides of the issue, it's like, no, there's no both sides. There's nothing to talk about. And when people tell you there's nothing to talk about, that tells you everything you need to know, whether they have American values, Christian values, godly values, that when they tell you to shut up, there's only one side of the issue. So that's one of the reasons it's such a blessing to talk to you, Brandon, because you've been a courageous voice out there. I just want people to go to your website again. It's theofficertatum.com, theofficertatum.com. Or go to BlexitFoundation.com. So many important things at that place. When your book comes out, we'd love to have you back on and just talk to you again. In the meantime, God bless you and the work you're doing. Hey, folks, Albin, I'm still in Dallas. Look at me.
Look at you.
I'm ashamed. I'm still here in Dallas. No, I'm going to be, by the way, I'm going to be speaking in El Paso on Wednesday evening. Great church in El Paso. I'm so excited. Anybody wants to know about it, if you're in El Paso or know anybody near there who can get there, I will be there. I'll be signing books. I'll be doing the whole thing. Looking forward to it. And you have to go to my website. The schedule is there with all the details. You go to Eric Metaxas. That's my name. EricMetaxas.com. You don't have to say it out loud. You just have to type it. EricMetaxas.com. And the schedule is there. And I'm going to be in El Paso on Wednesday. I'm here in Dallas till then doing some stuff with Daystar TV and with The Blaze and some radio. But I want to remind folks, we're doing a fundraiser with Food for the Poor. And today here we are. It is already middle way through the month. We're not doing that well, so we need your help. If you're thinking of giving, let me encourage you folks. Let's play this clip. I mean, this amazes me that kids in Honduras, this is what we're trying to raise money for. Kids in Honduras are starving. It's hard for us to fathom this. And, I don't know anybody in my world who's ever gone without food. My parents went without food during the war and after the war. And they told me these stories, which is why I know these things. This is real for some families. It's an amazing thing. So you can help out. Go to 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. Let's play the clip because this just makes it a little bit real. Let's see if we got that.
When you see the hunger, when you see the need, you go out on the field, even if they haven't eaten for 1 or 2 days, it just makes us real, real sad. The more we do, the more we see the need. The more places we go, the more we find people starving. The more we see children are eating the leaves from the trees.
Look, we cannot imagine this stuff. This is, we're so spoiled. We're so blessed is what we are. We're blessed. So take some of that blessing and share it. Go to our website, which is metaxastalk.com, and you'll see a banner and you can give. $37 feeds a kid for 6 months. That's amazing. Food for the Poor is able to stretch American dollars. It's just an amazing thing that little bit of money can feed a kid for 6 months. But Food for the Poor, they're amazing. They do great work. And that's why we work with them. Salem Radio, we've all worked with them. That's Dennis Prager and Hugh Hewitt and everybody. Now we've got Charlie Kirk and Sebastian Gorka, Dinesh D'Souza, the whole gang. We're doing what we can. But folks, we can't do anything except ask you to help out. So go to metaxastalk.com. If you'd rather phone, I know there's some wonderful people out there who'd rather phone. I'll give you the number, 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. If you can give, now would be the time. We do need your help, 844-863-HOPE. The need is really great. In Honduras, as I think I've said earlier today, they've been devastated. I mean, they already live 60% of them below the poverty line, which is a stunning thing. But beyond that, they've had tropical storm and a hurricane. There's been flooding. So it's just been devastated. None of us really can imagine. But we don't need to imagine. We just know that this is the situation.
Yeah, and I'd also like to remind folks out there that if you give $10,000, and of course, we have people out there in the audience that have that kind of money, Eric will have dinner with you, which is a great thing.
And if you prefer not, then I won't have dinner with you. But either way, I'll do what you like. I would be delighted to spend an evening with you and as many folks as you want to bring, whatever it is. It's just my time. But we'd love that if you can do that. 844-863-HOPE, 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 or go to metaxastalk.com. Click on the banner. God bless you.